He hadn't even really contemplated that yet. He was too busy trying to make sure they succeeded at their mission first. He was still wrapped up in those deep thoughts and in his new cloak when Natalie whispered something to the water dragon, and it unfurled its wings and took to the sky once more. They landed twice more, each time on small islands, to stretch and eat and take care of other necessities. Each time, they had Abigail use the helm to check before they got close, making sure they weren't flying directly into a dark elf patrol. The second time, they would have, but thanks to her warning, Natalie and Dagmar were able to bring their dragons around to the other side of the island, where they were able to land, take their break, and depart without being disturbed. In between those stops, Ben dozed, as did most of the others. Only Natalie and Dagmar needed to stay alert, and they quickly learned that they could nap as well. They just needed to wake occasionally to make sure they were still on course. The water dragons proved to be intelligent but playful, and more than once had to be chided for deviating from the intended path in order to buzz over an island or circle a waterspout or just skim low waves. Bit by bit, hour by hour, they drew closer to their destination. Ben tried not to let that thought overwhelm him. On the one hand, he was looking forward to finally completing the mission for which Elizabeth's armor had been squirreled away all this time, the mission that had been entrusted to him down through the centuries. On the other hand, the thought of facing Suktar in battle was utterly terrifying, even with the armor and his friends by his side. But Ben knew there was no turning back now. Chapter 14. A Close Call.
Land!
Josh's shout woke Ben from the half-doze he'd been in, and he sat up hastily, then had to flail a bit to keep from toppling off his perch. He'd been asleep enough that he'd apparently forgotten he was currently on the back of a dragon.
What?
He asked, scrubbing at his face with one hand to force away the last bits of slumber.
Where?
Peering ahead of them, it took a minute before he realized that what he had thought was a distant shadow on the water was actually land, as Josh had suggested.
Is that?
Charlie started to ask from right behind Ben. He didn't sound much more awake than Ben felt.
Them Jailer, Ben finished for him. Must be.
He shivered as a chill passed through him, though it was less about the rapidly expanding island than about what its proximity meant. Them Jailer was Suktar's oldest conquest, because the island nation was the nearest neighbour to Aurelia itself. If they were approaching Vemjela, it meant Suktar's own island could not be much farther. A rustling, whipping noise signalled the approach of the second water dragon as Dagmar manoeuvred her steed closer. She had one hand flat on the dragon's neck, as if she were communing with the massive creature. In her other hand was her spell shooter, and as Ben watched, she raised the weapon and shot herself in the face. She then opened her mouth, and Ben heard her voice as clearly as if she were sitting beside him.
"We need to be on our guard," Dagmar explained. "Even with most of his forces elsewhere, Suktar is not so foolish as to leave his homeland unprotected, if even one of his sentries sees us too soon."
Ben nodded his understanding. They wouldn't have to worry about stealth as much once they were in Aurelia, but they needed to get at least that close without being spotted. Otherwise, Suktar would be able to marshal his forces and bury them in Dark Elf troops, Elizabeth's armor or not.
"We'll be careful," Ben half said to himself.
"Easy for you to say,"
Natalie muttered from in front of him, where she was sitting behind the dragon's head and guiding its motion with gentle hand pressure and soft words. She patted the steed's neck reassuringly. The island grew larger and larger, and now it very clearly had shape and mass and substance, and smaller shadows flitting about above it.
"Sentries," Ben guessed, pointing them out to the others.
"Looks like a lot of them."
"Yeah, Suktar's not stupid," Charlie admitted. "If I had a house, I'd put a fence out in front too."
Ben nodded, but his mind was already elsewhere. How were they going to get past all those dark elves? They weren't exactly inconspicuous on these water dragons. He fidgeted absent-mindedly, his hand tugging at the top edge of his hood, and after a second, realizing, he smiled. Or were they?
"Everybody," he shouted. Pull up your hoods, then lie down as flat as you can. Face down, quick!
Ben waved his hands to get Dagmar's attention and mimicked pulling up his hood and ducking low. Thankfully, she got it straight away, and they all quickly covered up. Vemjella was right in front of them now, and the sentries were close enough that he could make out the shapes of their steeds' wings. Any second now they'd be visible, and all hell would break loose. Behind him, Ben heard rustling as Charlie and Josh hurried to follow his instructions, and in front of him he saw Natalie doing the same. Then Ben couldn't see anything, because he had his hood up and his face pressed down against the ridge in the dragon's back, the same one he'd been clinging to for support. Time seemed to stretch on, and just as Ben was about to look, he heard a screech. His heart sped up, and he clung on hard, hoping desperately that those guards would somehow not see them. How effective were these cloaks? He knew that they allowed the wearer to blend into his surroundings so well he was practically invisible. But maybe the Dark Elves could look through them? Or maybe the Wyverns would see them somehow? Flapping wings buffeted him, and out of the corner of his eye he could see a dark winged beast. Over the din of wind and the screech of the Wyverns, he heard a Dark Elf command. He put his hand on his spellshooter. One thing was for sure, they wouldn't go down without a fight. A sudden gust of air almost dislodged Ben, but he clung on. Out of reflex, he looked up, and to his intense relief, saw the back of the Dark Elves as they flew back to their posts. He hunkered down for several more minutes before he dared risk another peek. Carefully looking around, he sighed in relief.
Okay, he called out. We're clear.
The others quickly returned to sitting upright.
How did you know that would work? Josh demanded. What if somebody had seen us?
Ben twisted around so he could grin at the guardian of the shield.
I didn't, but I knew there was a chance, and sometimes you've just got to gamble. In the end, all they saw were two water dragons out for a nice long flight together.
Charlie threw up his hands.
Great! Another master plan smoothly executed by our fearless leader.
Ben grinned. Thanks to Dagmar, they all had elven cloaks. Ben had seen what one of those could do in terms of hiding its wearer. He made a mental note to himself, only realizing now how effective they were. In truth, he'd been skeptical, but now he knew these things might play a major part in keeping them alive.
The trick with the cloaks will get us past some of them, he pointed out. When that doesn't work, we'll run or fight, but we'll try to sneak our way across first.
Behind him, Charlie snorted.
I'm good with sneaking, he said. Whatever gets us out of this place and into Aurelia, and then back home safely.
They continued flying, Dagmar pulling ahead of it, so there was more of a distance between them. They'd decided a while ago that it would be better to separate, so if they were taken unawares, they couldn't be wiped out in one swoop. A grim outlook, but necessary. They passed over Vemjella, a land of rolling but barren fields and desolate landscapes. From what Ben remembered of what he'd read, it had been green and full of life before it had fallen to the Dark Elf Kingdom. Vemjella was only a few hours from Aurelia. Ben felt a flutter in his stomach as he realized they were almost there. It would be no simple task traversing the Dark Elf homeland, of course, but just getting there was no mean feat. As his eyes scanned the bland scenery, a flicker caught his eye. He squinted, looking hard at the point where he was sure something had moved.
Natalie, you've got sharper eyes than me. Can you see anything down?
Before he could finish his sentence, something shot like a bolt from where he had been looking and slammed into their dragon's right shoulder. Ben flew backwards, sending Charlie rolling. They both frantically grabbed hold of something and managed to hang on. Ben looked up, checking on his friends. The dragon had righted itself, but was obviously hurt, its normally smooth flight now ragged.
Charlie, you're right.
Charlie nodded frantically, but pointed to the right. Ben looked and saw with horror that Natalie was lying unconscious, but somehow still on the dragon. Just as he saw this, she started sliding off.
No!
Joshua had also managed to hang on, but was too far away to help. Ben pulled himself along fast, grabbing scales and harness where he could, eyes locked on Natalie's silent form.
Natalie, wake up!
He was only a few feet away now,
And then it happened. The dragon hit an air pocket and lifted with a sudden jolt. Natalie slid right off the side.
No!
Ben turned to Joshua. Your shooter, now! Joshua didn't even pause. He pulled it out and threw it in one motion. Ben snatched it out of the air.
Ben, what the...
Charlie started, but Ben wasn't listening. Instead, he threw himself after Natalie. Arms behind him, spell shooters in each hand, Ben shot like a rocket straight towards Natalie. There she was, falling fast, tumbling with no control. Ben moved his own spell shooter forward, aimed and fired. A long line shot out, streaming ahead.
Come on!
Ben screamed in desperation, this being the most important shot he'd ever made. Bang! The line hit Natalie dead on and enveloped her. Ben twisted and looked up, only to see the dragon speeding towards him like an oversized arrow. Pointing Joshua's spell shooter up, Ben fired, another line flying out. His heart sank as he saw his only shot miss, passing just to the right. But then suddenly it drew tight, almost pulling the gun out of his hands. Ben was pulled so hard in both directions, the strain made him scream. Pain lashed through his arms and back, but he held on. Concentrating through the pain, he forced the spells to contract, pulling Natalie towards him and himself towards the dragon. Joshua came into view, both hands wrapped around the spell line.
Charlie, you're going to have to pull them in, he shouted.
Charlie's eyes were wide with shock.
Are you kidding me? I've got a better idea.
Focusing, he selected an air spell in his spell shooter and fired. The spell slowly but definitely moved down the barrel, sweat starting to form on Charlie's forehead.
Come on, Charlie!
Joshua, nowhere near as proficient as Natalie with the dragon, was barely keeping the creature under control. Ben gave a cry of pain. Charlie doubled his effort, and with a final cry, the spell shot out and spun around both Ben and Natalie, creating a small cloud of air. Charlie used it to lift them both up and finally onto the dragon. Holstering his spell shooter, he went straight to Ben and secured him, and then to Natalie. Despite the pain, Ben sat up.
Is she all right?
Charlie nodded.
Ben, do me a favor. Never, ever, ever do that again.
He then gave Ben a rough hug.
I thought you were a goner there. Scared me out of my wits.
Joshua continued flying, the dragon no longer able to keep a smooth ride due to the injured shoulder, but he still managed to guide the huge beast close to Dagmar. Ben gave him his shooter back, then settled down as comfortably as possible. He ached all over and felt like he had run a marathon. Doing the same as Dagmar had earlier, Joshua amplified his voice with a spell and, after guiding his dragon closer, told her what had happened.
We had a scare. Ben's white, Natalie's out cold, and I can barely keep control of this thing as its shoulder is badly burned. But we can't land as now we know they obviously have troops on the ground. Is there anything we can do?
Dagmar and Abigail put their heads together, and then Abigail answered him. Her voice came into his mind, tinged with concern.
Joshua, the dragon is hurt worse than you realize. If you don't heal it soon, no matter what you do, it will die for the sea.
Joshua tried to lean over to the damaged shoulder to get a better look, eyes wide in alarm.
Well, that's just great. What am I supposed to do?
He felt annoyance briefly, before Abigail spoke again.
Well, if you will listen instead of cutting me off... It's a water dragon, and has highly advanced healing abilities, but you'll have to suffuse it with water for that to take effect. Get Charlie to use a basic water spell immediately, and hopefully that will do the trick.
Joshua turned to Charlie and saw that he was pulling himself up next to him. Evidently, Joshua wasn't the only one who could hear her voice in his head. Charlie leaned over the side and pulled out his spell shooter. Aiming carefully, he sent a stream of pure water at the burnt shoulder. The dragon gave a roar, and Charlie just about hung on. Joshua shouted from above him.
Charlie, what's happening down there? You almost got us thrown off.
Charlie, hanging on for dear life, kept the water going.
I've got no idea. I'm just doing what I was told inside of my head.
After a few more hair-raising moments, the dragon's flight started to smooth out. Abigail's voice again came through clearly in Joshua's mind.
Wow, that was close. Charlie, I think Ben's rubbing off on you. Somehow, you're going to have to stay there holding the water steady on that injured spot. In the meantime, we're going to have to fly right next to each other. It's dangerous, because if they do spot us, we could all be wiped out in one go. On the other hand, it is easier for me to conceal us all that way. Just follow right behind.
Joshua nodded and fell back a bit, so he could bring them directly behind Dagmar's dragon. The next hour was one of continuous suspense. Ben sat there, knowing that at any moment they could be found out, while at the same time trying to keep an eye on Charlie. He was amazed by his friend's courage, and also felt a little surge of pride in the way they were banding together as a team in this dangerous situation. Finally, Abigail's voice came to all of them.
We are past any guard points. From what I can tell, it's wilderness until we are over the sea again, and then it's a short trip to Aurelia.
They sped over the rest of the island without any incident. With that behind them, soon a much darker and rockier island loomed ahead.
Aurelia, Ben said,
trying to swallow past the sudden dryness in his throat.
Suktar's home.
They had finally made it. Chapter 15. Underwater. Of course, Ben knew that approaching Aurelia and reaching Suktar's palace to confront the Dark Elf King were two wildly different things, with a whole world of difficulty between them. Natalie had come around after Charlie had used a few healing spells on her and Ben, and despite being a bit groggy, she had insisted on taking over the reins again. It was she, with her keen elven eyes, who noticed a dark shape appear on the horizon from behind the island's jagged skyline. Then another, and another, and another.
Gods!
She shouted at the top of her voice. Crowbeg on the other dragon leaned forwards, squinting, and could just about make them out. He raised his fist.
But only a handful. We can handle them.
As the strangers flew closer, Ben kept revising his estimate of their size, and that of their mounts. It was only once he could clearly make out the Dark Elves themselves that he gasped, the truth finally dawning.
Those aren't wyverns,
he shouted, locking his legs more tightly around their own steed and tightening his grip on his weapons.
Those are dragons!
They were black dragons, the biggest and fiercest of all. Two water dragons and seven of them against four Dark Elves and four wyverns was a fight Ben agreed they would most likely win. But four black dragons? Even one would most likely overpower them. How could they possibly hope to match four? As if reading his mind, Dagmar yelled,
Right!
And wheeled her dragon to the side in a long swooping dive that took it down out of the approaching defender's flight path. Natalie shouted at Charlie to clamber back up while immediately diving after Dagmar. The two water dragons raced towards the possible shelter of some cliffs and peaks that loomed up ahead. There was no way they would make it with Charlie hanging off the side, so they could only hope that the dragon's shoulder had healed enough to put up with the burst of speed. Shrieks of protest and angry curses told Ben they'd already been spotted and their hasty departure marked, but he was too busy clinging to the water dragon to dare glancing behind them. Black dragons were big, powerful, and fast, but their water dragons seemed more graceful, more agile, and Ben desperately hoped that would be enough to let them outrun their pursuers. The bellow that filled the sky told him that at least one of the black dragons had been unwilling to let its prey escape so easily. The rushing sound that followed confirmed that they had at least one of the massive creatures stubbornly giving chase.
"We need to get down below the tree line!"
Ben shouted to Natalie, who nodded and stroked the water dragon's neck just below its long jaw. It responded to the touch by dipping still lower, descending at such a steep angle, Ben was sure they were about to smash headfirst into rocks. Somehow, the water dragon managed to level out, its claws nearly scraping the ground as it came out of the dive. Now it was racing along barely 10 feet off the ground, which Ben found a lot more disconcerting than when it had been high among the clouds. Down here, it was easy to tell just how fast they were really going by how quickly the trees and bushes whipped past. Dagmar had let Natalie take the lead after their initial descent, and was now matching them perhaps 30 feet to the side. The trees here were scraggly and sparse, with stunted limbs and flimsy leaves. They barely provided shade, let alone cover, and a dark shadow suddenly loomed above them. That gave Natalie and Dagmar just enough warning to yank hard on their dragon's long, fluted ears, causing the two beasts to split apart as each curved away. Just then, the black dragon struck, its powerful claws digging deep into the ground where the guardians had been mere seconds before. With a shrill scream of pure frustration, the black dragon pulled its talons free and rose slightly, seeking a second attack. Now the two water dragons were 100 feet apart or more, which meant it would have to pick one to target. Ben made the mistake of glancing up and gulped as heavy-lidded, slit-pupil golden eyes homed in on him, spearing him in place with their gaze. It was obvious which lucky member of their little group had just attracted the black dragon's attention.
"Get us out of here," he urged Natalie,
and she responded by leaning in and whispering to their mount, driving it to ever greater speeds. But the black dragon stayed right on their tail, snapping its long jaws and grasping with its massive talons, eager to catch them once and for all.
"I can't shake it," Natalie yelled. "I need something to give me an edge, or we're never getting out of here alive."
Ben frowned, his mind a whirl but coming up empty. What could give them an edge over the bloodthirsty behemoth right behind them? Then Charlie tapped him on the shoulder.
"Look!"
His best friend pointed past them both, past Natalie and the dragon's head, off to the side where the trees stood a bit taller and prouder, and a long ribbon of silver stretched across the ground before vanishing from view.
"Whoa!"
Ben nodded sharply.
"Charlie, you're a genius! Nat, take us to the river!"
She directed their dragon, and Dagmar followed suit, the two of them angling towards that inviting gleam. The black dragon was right behind them, its claws and teeth still clamping down on nothing but empty air, but the strikes close enough that Ben could feel them slice or clamp shut mere inches from his head. This had better work. They flew up over a shallow ridge, and there, stretched out before them, was the river. Ben barely registered the beauty of the river, reflecting the sunshine and glimmering like silver. The two water dragons crested the ridge and shot forwards, the sight of the water reinvigorating them. They reached the river's edge, perhaps 40 feet ahead of their pursuer. The water dragons did not hesitate as they dove for the water and pierced it cleanly, carrying themselves and their riders deep below the surface. Even as they dropped into the water, Ben could hear the black dragon bellowing in rage, splashing and thrashing at the water. But it could not dive the way they had. It could not reach them down here, near the very bottom of the river where its bed narrowed. They were safe. But for how long? The water dragons could breathe underwater, but they could not impart that skill to their riders. Ben had gulped air quickly just before they'd plunged into the river, and was certain his friends had done the same. But how long could they hold their breath? They were gambling that their dragons were too fast in water for the black dragon to keep pace, and hoped they could lose their bulky attacker here in these waterways quickly, before being forced to resurface for more air. Ben clung to the dragon, shut his eyes, and tried not to think about how his lungs were already burning, his head beginning to throb and his limbs to twitch, or how that black dragon could be hovering in wait for them wherever they did eventually emerge. He thought about anything and everything he could besides those concerns in order to take his mind off them. Finally, just as he was beginning to feel lightheaded and was starting to notice black spots around the edges of his vision, Ben felt the water dragon begin to edge upwards, slowly and cautiously. Its head crested the river, peering about, and then the rest of it followed, dragging its riders back into the light and the air. Ben gasped gratefully for the latter, and all around him his friends did the same. Only once his head had stopped spinning did he think to look around, scanning the sky for their recent hunters. Up above, he saw nothing but blue touched with the occasional cloud.
"Looks like we lost them,"
Abigail reported, the artifact in her hand indicating that she had not been searching with eyes alone.
"But they'll be back, and a lot more of them too."
"I know."
Ben frowned, patting the glistening green hide of the creature they rode.
"Which is why I think it's time for a change of plans."
Chapter 16. The Tunnels of Aurelia.
"Explain to me again how this makes sense,"
Charlie said as he shouldered his pack. Their water dragon shook itself, gave Natalie a parting brush of its long cheek, and then slipped back under the water without a sound, vanishing at once into the river's shadowy depths. The second dragon was right beside it, and an instant later it was as if they had never been there at all.
"Our biggest, strongest force," Charlie continued, "and there it goes."
"There it goes," Ben agreed, hefting his bag. "And when they pop out somewhere well away from here and start flying like mad, all those dark elves and their dragons will go after them. But they'll dive back underwater to lose them. They don't have to worry about protecting us anymore, and they can hold their breath a whole lot longer than we can, I'm sure." He shrugged. "It's a risk, sure, giving up their strength and the ability to fly, but I think in the long run we'll be better off distracting the dark elves so we can make it that much farther before they figure out where we are or how to get to us." Charlie continued to grumble, but his complaining was mostly under his breath. Ben took a second to look around, studying the steep, dark stone walls that surrounded them. Tightening the straps around his shoulders, he turned to his friends.
"Everybody ready?"
he asked.
They all nodded. "Okay, let's go. Dagmar?"
She stepped forwards, Elizabeth's boots gleaming on her feet.
"Right," she declared. "Follow me,"
and immediately took off at a quick pace, her feet rising and falling in a steady rhythm and shining with each step. Ben fell in behind her, as did the others, and in no time they were marching through a narrow, twisting passage that circled one of the peaks. The river disappeared behind them, and Ben couldn't help feeling a pang knowing that now there was no way the water dragons could return for them. They were on their own. But even as Ben questioned his own decision, they heard a loud, heavy flapping from above.
"Up against the wall, quick!"
he shouted, throwing himself against the cool stone of the cliff they were skirting. The others did the same, pressing themselves along that side of the path as a large, dark shape blotted out the sky overhead. A harsh screech struck next, descending upon them like an avalanche and echoing throughout the cliffs and peaks. Had the black dragon found them? But its second shriek, an instant later, sounded more querulous, more hesitant, and when it cried out a third time, it sounded so confused, so forlorn, that Ben realized with relief that it didn't actually know they were here. He nudged Dagmar, and she started edging forwards, at first moving at a crawl, but gradually picking up speed, until they were marching along the pass as quickly as they could without tripping over themselves. The dragon bellowed again, but now its roar was behind them, and falling farther back with every step. Still, it wasn't until they rounded a bend and left the dragon well behind that Ben felt he could gulp air once more. He'd been too afraid to breathe, terrified that any noise might give them away.
"Okay," Charlie muttered behind him, "so maybe leaving the dragons behind was a good idea."
Ben chuckled before catching himself. "Thanks for the vote of confidence," he told his best friend, but he was smiling when he said it. And with the black dragon falling farther and farther behind, Ben felt lighter and more optimistic with every step. Which still didn't mean this was going to be easy.
"We can't shake them," Josh pointed out. "There's just too many of them all over the place. They're like rats."
They had paused for a few minutes to catch their breath and eat a hasty meal of dried meat, cheese and bread from their packs. They didn't have any real shelter, but the path had widened enough for them to at least gather in a rough oval, and the cliffs to either side were not quite as steep or as smooth as they had been earlier, allowing places to lean or even sit. Ben had nearly groaned with relief when he'd perched himself on a small outcropping and took the weight off his aching feet. Between that, the food, and a few sips from his water skin, he was practically in heaven. They did have to keep their eyes open, however, because Josh was right. The dark elves were everywhere. Already in one day of travel, they'd had to hide from at least three different patrols, and that wasn't counting the black dragon, which was clearly still circling the region, hoping to spot them. The need for constant wariness was leaving all of them tense and wound up, but they all knew it would be a terrible idea to attack any of those dark elves, not unless they knew for certain they could take out those patrols without a sound, otherwise they risked drawing others. So for now, Ben and his friends snuck through the mountains like thieves in the night, determined to make as little noise as possible. But it was getting harder and harder to escape notice. Nor were the elves themselves the only threat. A flock of birds that looked similar to ravens, but with talons and beaks more like eagles, had attacked them earlier, and fled screeching only when Ben and the others began firing spells at the airborne predators. A few minutes ago, Abigail had tugged on Ben's sleeve and pointed over a nearby ridge, where he spotted several sets of upright triangular ears and several matching pairs of glowing yellow eyes. They weren't cats, however. They were dogs, or wolves, he guessed from the shape. Given the distance, they had to be far larger than normal, at least his own size, if not bigger. Just what they needed right now.
"Which way from here?"
Ben asked Dagmar. But much to his surprise, she frowned and shook her head.
"I am not certain," she admitted. "The boots are telling me conflicting things," she said slowly, glaring at the offending footwear as if it might somehow hear her. "I believe they are attempting to convey that all roads from here are equally fraught with peril."
"Hmm." Charlie looked fascinated, despite himself.
"So they normally show you just the one way to go, and right now you're getting several all at once?"
"Something like that," Dagmar agreed.
"The boots will show me the best route to reach my destination as quickly as possible, and often several landmarks along the way. Right now they are showing me several different routes instead."
"All roads lead to Rome," Charlie offered. "If Rome is, you know, covered in dark elves and monsters."
He kept glancing up to where the cliffs still allowed a small patch of blue sky between them. When Ben did the same, he caught sight of several dark shapes hurtling back and forth. Was all of that to search for them? Or was some of it just regular soldiers on patrol, and perhaps dark elves carrying messages to and fro right over their heads? Either way, it was certainly enough to keep him on edge.
"There may be another option," Crowbeg offered slowly, stroking his silver beard. "We can keep fighting our way along ledges and over ravines in the night, constantly worrying if dark elves will descend upon us, or we can go to the last place they would ever consider, the one place they would never dare check."
He frowned and stomped one foot.
"Here."
This time, it was Natalie who caught on first.
"You want us to go underground?" she asked with a shiver. "No way."
Abigail was not so quick to dismiss the idea.
"Dark elves don't like being below ground," she agreed slowly. "So they wouldn't want to follow us down there or patrol there either. That could work."
But she shook her head.
"Though I'm not wild about the idea either."
"What do you mean exactly?" Ben asked the dwarf. "Are there tunnels beneath us? Caverns? How do you know?"
"Dwarves know about such things," Crowbeg replied,
tapping his nose with one finger and winking. Then he laughed.
"Plus, I've heard rumours that there were tunnels here once, and that my kin mined them for golden jewels. Suktar kicked all the dwarves off Aurelia and slaughtered those who wouldn't leave. But the tunnels themselves should still be there."
Ben turned to Dagmar.
"What do the boots say about the tunnels?" he asked.
But she shook her head.
"It isn't like that," she explained in her usual matter-of-fact tone. "I can see a path to the tunnels, and at least part of the way through them, but that's it." She shrugged. "Whether we take that route or go some other way is entirely up to us."
Ben considered their options. Continue on the way they had been going, with dark elves and bloody birds and giant wolves popping up from all sides, and the constant threat of being utterly overrun, or go underground, trusting that these tunnels were still there, and still usable and not infested with more dark elves, or something worse. Finally, he spoke up.
"I don't see a lot of downsides to trying it," he suggested. "If we can't get to the tunnels or there's something wrong under there, we come back up and keep going the way we have been. But if they do work, they'd save us a ton of time."
A loud crack overhead made them all glance up, and Ben saw that the patch of sky had turned dark, but not from a hovering black dragon this time. Instead, there were thick, heavy grey clouds massing and blotting out the sun. The crack had been thunder. Ben shut his eyes as another bolt of lightning lit up the sky. Thunder and lightning. That meant a storm. And from the look of things, it was all but here already. It certainly made their decision easier, because traipsing around in a downpour wasn't going to help them with anything.
"Okay," he told Crowbeg, "we'll give these tunnels a try. But I want you out front with Dagmar. She'll find us the way in and through, but you are our expert on the underground, so I'll want you up there to make sure everything is safe."
The dwarven chef nodded, leaping to his feet and slamming one beefy hand against his chest in salute.
Absolutely. I will lead you through safely, he promised.
Ben hoped his friend was right. He wasn't thrilled at the idea of being cut off from the air and sky, but if it got them there more quickly and more safely, he was all for that. With any luck, on the way back, they wouldn't have to worry about being spotted.
Either that, a dark voice inside his head pointed out, or you'll be beyond caring.
Chapter 17 A Secret Meeting. They did not make it into the tunnels before the storm hit. One minute they were trudging along behind Dagmar and Krobeg, squinting to see through the darkness that had descended so heavily upon them, and gasping for breath, both from their exertions and because the air had become so moist and thick it was like walking through fog. The next, there was a sudden rushing sound, and then sheets of rain fell upon them, nearly driving the guardians to the ground with the force of each raindrop. Ben could barely see, and had to constantly use his hands to wipe streams of water from his eyes. He could barely hear over the rain, which was why Krobeg had to lean in close and practically shout in his ear.
We found a way in!
Ben gave a thumbs up and followed the dwarf up a short, rough incline. Dagmar stood at the top, completely soaked, but her face showing no sign of discomfort. When he reached her, she gestured just to the right of where she stood, and Ben saw that the rock there had split. Beneath its low overhang was nothing but darkness.
"You're sure this is a tunnel, and not just a hole?" he yelled.
Krobeg nodded.
"They're tunnels," the dwarf promised. "Come on!"
And without even a second's hesitation, he ducked under the overhang and leapt feet first through the hole, disappearing from view. Ben shook his head. This seemed crazy, not to mention dangerous, but he trusted his fellow guardians, and Dagmar hadn't objected. Besides, they needed to get out of this rain. So he sighed, wiped more water from his face, and slid down and into the hole. There he dangled his legs for a few seconds, before finally pushing off and allowing himself to fall. He tried to keep his body relaxed but ready, since he had no idea how far the drop would be or what was awaiting him at the other end. It felt like he was falling forever, but Ben knew it was probably only a few seconds before his feet slammed into something solid. He tried to keep his feet, but the impact jolted him too badly and he toppled, landing hard. Well, at least that meant there was some sort of flaw here. After quickly drawing his spell shooter, Ben fired it above his head. The tiny white glow that shot out rapidly expanded, becoming a glowing orb about the size of a football. It cast enough light that he could now see he was indeed standing in a tunnel, one with a flat, smoothly paved floor but arched ceilings. Fortunately, it was only 20 feet or so from the ceiling down. Ben could just make out the hole he had entered through, a slightly lighter patch against the dark all around, and he waved.
"Come on down," he shouted. "It's about a 20-foot drop."
"Understood," Dagmar called back. "Sending Josh now."
A second later, Josh plummeted down from above. He had the advantage of being able to see where he was going, however, and he stuck the landing, quickly moving aside to make room for the next member of their group.
"Not bad," was all he said as he looked around.
Abigail came next, then Charlie, then Natalie, and finally Dagmar.
"Nice place you've got here," Charlie commented as he dusted himself off. "Very underground monster lair."
Natalie had other concerns beside the decor.
"We made it through just in time," she explained as she caught her breath. "Those wolves were just starting to slink closer when I jumped, and they're huge, as tall as Josh and as heavy as Krobeg, I think."
She shook her head. "They obviously figured they could handle just the two of us. They might have been right, too."
"Maybe, but you don't have to worry about that now," Ben assured her.
Now he was doubly glad he'd decided to trust Krobeg's instincts and try the tunnel route. Here they were at least warm and dry, once Dagmar had cleaned and dried all of them with a single spell, and did not have to worry about giant wolves and whatever else Aurelia had in store for them. All they had to do now was survive these tunnels and figure out a way back out of them once they were as close to their destination as they could get. Ben doubted it would wind up being that easy. It never did. The first problem they had was light. Ben's orb was bright enough for them to see in at least a 20-foot circle, but after a few minutes it began to fade. He had a few more pellets of the same spell, but didn't want to use all of them up right away, just in case he needed them for something else later. It didn't help that they had no idea how long they'd be underground, or if it would always be this dark, or even darker.
"I've got a few light spells too," Charlie assured him, as they stood around taking stock. "One of them I picked because, though it's not a ton of light, it lasts for a few hours."
"Nice." Ben shook his head.
"Yeah, all mine together won't last that long."
Natalie and Dagmar both had light spells of some sort as well. Josh and Abigail did not. Krobeg didn't carry a spell shooter at all, but he didn't seem worried.
"Dwarves have excellent night vision," he explained. "For us, a deep black pit is the same as a moonlit eve. I'll be fine."
"You may be," Josh shot back, "but the rest of us still have to see where we're going."
"We'll take turns casting light spells," Ben decided, speaking to the other three who had brought such magic. "That way, none of us has to use all of their light spells while the rest of us still have all of ours." He looked at Dagmar. "Can you find us a way out of here?" She paused for a moment, seeming to get her bearings.
"In honesty, I can perceive the general direction we need to go, but we might find ourselves in a tunnel that leads to a dead end. I can advise, but, Krobeg, I'd appreciate your help on this."
Krobeg nodded.
"She's right. Dwarven tunnels almost always follow a similar design, one that intentionally confuses any non-dwarves. If you let me know the direction you want to go, I can guide us there."
"All right," Ben stated loudly. "Krobeg, lead on."
The dwarf grinned and thumped Ben on the back, then turned and strode away down the tunnel.
"This way!"
Ben sighed and quickly followed, the rest falling in line behind him. But after a few paces, Charlie slid to the side and then scurried to catch up to Ben.
"So, what are the chances he gets us completely and utterly lost?" Charlie asked softly.
Ben laughed and glanced at his best friend.
"I'd say at least 50-50, he admitted as quietly. "Just kidding. If there is anyone I'd want to lead me through dark underground tunnels, it would be a dwarf."
Some time later, however, Ben started to get a bit concerned.
"Any idea how much farther we have to go?"
"Perhaps a mile, possibly two," their guide answered. "Do not worry. I know exactly where we are in relation to the exit, and how to best get us there, and then out the other side."
They continued to trudge along behind the dwarf, several of the others munching on nuts, cheese, and bread as they walked. After a few minutes, the floor began to angle more steeply downwards.
"This is the way out," Josh called from back behind Charlie. "Are you sure?"
"Of course I am," Krobeg retorted. "Why wouldn't I be?"
"Because it looks like we're going down instead of up," Josh replied.
"And so we are for the moment," the dwarf agreed. "But that will change. Be patient."
The floor continued to slope down. But now something else was changing too. There seemed to be more ambient light.
Or perhaps just a really bright light source somewhere nearby.
When the most recent light spell faded away, Ben was pleased to discover that he could now see, if a little dimly. The others were gasping with surprise and delight as well. Meanwhile, Krobeg was grumbling to himself.
"These tall, skinny humans think I don't know my way around underground, do they?"
The light continued to intensify, and after a few more minutes, they not only didn't need any more light spells, but were having trouble seeing anything, especially fine details, because all around them was so bright.
"Where is that light coming from?" Ben asked.
No one had a good answer. He called a halt and turned to address them.
"We're not going to just walk into some area that could be inhabited, but it's too dangerous to bypass it without knowing what's in there. There's only one way to find out. Charlie, Natalie, I need you to be my eyes and ears, like always. Let me know if you see anything over the next dip in the floor and stuff like that."
He studied his other friends.
"Dagmar," he said at last, "I'll need you to keep using the boots to find us the safest way out of here. Abigail, keep an eye out. Let me know if you pick up a hint of anything or anyone. Josh, Krobeg, be ready for trouble just in case."
Everyone shifted gear and weapons and adjusted stances and attitudes, preparing for the worst as Ben drew his spell shooter and edged forwards as quietly as he could, heading in the direction of the mysterious light. Natalie and Charlie had moved ahead of him and returned a moment or two later.
"There's a room up ahead," Natalie reported. "At least, I think it's a room. Maybe it's just a convenient cavern. Either way, that's the source of the light."
"It's lit by what looks like your orb," Charlie added. "Only a dozen of them, and each one's like 10 times brighter."
His eyes were nearly the size of an orb themselves as he continued.
"And there are people there."
Ben frowned. "People? All the way down here?" He shook his head. It sounded crazy, but Natalie was nodding too. What did it mean? "What are they doing?" Ben asked.
"Talking, looks like," Charlie answered. "We couldn't hear what they were saying, though. We couldn't hear anything," he shrugged. "Must have been a spell."
They'd often used a similar one back in Tissia, when they wanted to talk about something without being overheard. Ben was especially curious now. A strange group meeting deep underground in Aurelia and using magic to mask their conversation. He had to know what that was all about.
"Okay, now we definitely need to check into this. Something smells wrong, but I absolutely want to make sure we don't get caught in a trap."
He looked at his friends and fellow guardians.
"Let's split up. Natalie, Charlie and I will check out what's going on. Krobeg and Dagmar, go on ahead and make sure we're on the right track to get out of here. I don't want to have to make a fast exit and end up at a dead end."
He turned to Joshua and Abigail, a plan forming in his mind.
"You two, scour the area and see if there are any traps or enemies around. And guys, I don't want any of us, me included, to hair off and get into trouble. While we do need to find out what this is about, our objective is getting to Suktar."
Abigail was nodding.
"I can use the helm to perceive traps, and with Joshua's help to nullify them, we can make sure the area is safe."
Joshua had a determined look in his eye. Ben felt a rush of pride. This little group was a real team now.
"Go on ahead," he instructed Dagmar and Krobeg.
He nodded at Josh and Abigail.
"Go with them at first, just so you know where we need to end up, then circle back."
Krobeg nodded and took a step closer to Natalie and Charlie.
"I'll tell you the way to go first," he explained. "It's simple enough. There is a large intersection a short way ahead. We shall meet you there."
The three of them conferred a moment before both Natalie and Charlie nodded that they understood. Then Krobeg saluted and turned away. He and Dagmar continued along the path they'd been following, with Josh and Abigail right behind them. Ben watched them go. He hated the idea of splitting up, but a part of him insisted that this strange new sighting was too important to ignore. He turned his attention to Natalie and Charlie.
"Show me," he instructed,
and followed behind as they retraced their steps. Sure enough, the light grew brighter and brighter as the tunnel dipped and then ended at a tall arch. Beyond was a deep bowl-shaped space, far too even to be natural. Just as Charlie had said, large glowing orbs hovered at intervals right where the walls ended and the vaulted ceiling began, making the room almost too bright to see into. But Ben could still make out the handful of figures conversing at the room's centre. He couldn't pick out details, but all of them looked to be adults, and even from here, they exuded an aura of immense power. Whatever spell they had used for silence, it was not allowing a single sound to escape. Ben stepped to one side, peering through the archway without standing directly before it, and he considered the strange scene. Most of the figures below did not look like elves, and he couldn't imagine why Suktar would bother to hold a war council so far from his own castle anyway. Who were they then? They were clearly powerful, very much so, and they also took great pains not to be discovered. Then beside him, Charlie gasped.
"It's the High Council," he blurted out. "It's got to be."
Ben knew at once his best friend must be right. Who else would be so powerful and so secretive? Considering the situation, Ben raised his spell shooter and concentrated on a small swirled blue pellet. Charlie let out a hiss of fright.
"Ben, what are you doing? What happened to your little speech back there about not getting into trouble?"
Ben waved his friend back, shushing him.
That was back then. This is now. Things have changed.
Charlie was starting to freak out, his hands flapping at his sides.
Back then? It was all of 60 seconds ago.
Before Charlie could protest any more, Ben aimed at the air just beyond the archway, focused and fired. The spell that emerged was no wider than the spell shooter's own barrel, and it spun as it raced forwards, looking like a giant corkscrew made of air. When it struck the space past the archway, it stopped advancing, but continued to spin, and after a second, Ben realized that nothing was happening. The spell finally dissipated, leaving no change where it had been focused. Charlie was practically dancing on the spot.
Okay, great, that didn't work. Let's go.
Ben shook his head absently. There had to be a way to find out what they were discussing. This couldn't be a coincidence. Charlie, can you pause on panic mode for a second and help me out? Using that spell was, in retrospect, unintelligent. These guys are the most powerful bunch of wizards in all of the Unseen Kingdoms. A little spell like that isn't going to get me in, and I doubt anything I have will make a difference. Charlie was close to bursting now, cheeks puffed while he jumped up and down on the spot. His words came out so fast, he was hardly understandable.
Ben, there is a reason I am panicking, and I think you just covered it. If they notice anything, we'll never make it out of here. It will likely take one of them approximately 1/100 of a second to squash us both. The only way you could possibly penetrate the barrier would be with something as powerful as they are, or made by them, so let's just get out of here.
Ben's eyebrows shot up, and he clicked his fingers.
Charlie, you're a genius.
Pulling Elizabeth's sword off his back, he moved closer to the invisible barrier, blocking out Charlie's increasingly worried pleading. Ben focused on the sword and the council. The sword started glowing, and he somehow knew what to do. Instead of piercing the barrier, he put the point of the sword on the ground right at the point where the barrier seemed to start, and willed his mind to connect. Nothing seemed to change visibly, but suddenly he felt a rush of anticipation as sound started coming through.
Need to concentrate our efforts here, someone was saying. This is where the true imbalance lies.
Perhaps, another replied, but let us not forget the dangers inherent in the Institute. We cannot allow them to grow complacent again.
I do not think we will have to worry about that for a long while yet, a third declared. But if they fall, the balance will be shattered, possibly irrevocably.
Ben struggled to breathe. His head was reeling. It really was the High Council, and they were talking about the war between Saktar and the Institute. He wanted to listen further, but Charlie grabbed him on the shoulder.
We need to get out of here,
his best friend said softly, hand shaking.
What little I could find about them suggested these guys really like their privacy. If they catch us here, they won't be happy, Ben.
Ben hesitated, but finally nodded. Completing their mission was more important than satisfying his curiosity, and he knew that even though the sword was somehow keeping them hidden, things could still go very wrong.
Okay, he finally agreed. Let's go.
Charlie didn't need telling twice, and he practically sprinted out of the narrow corridor, causing Ben to race after him. He couldn't help looking back, however, as they sped away. Someday, he vowed, he would find out what the High Council was doing here, and what they were really up to. But not today. Chapter 18 Moss and Frost.
Which way?
Ben asked, once they were clear of that chamber and back in the tunnels proper. He kept resisting the urge to turn around and go back to hear more, but he knew Charlie was right. This was a mystery that would have to wait for another time. They had more pressing concerns at the moment, like finding the rest of the Guardians, getting out of these tunnels, getting to Saktar, and completing the task of taking him down and ending this war. The High Council would have to wait. Natalie was the one who answered.
This way, she said. We just need to follow Krobek's directions to the intersection point.
She gestured down a side tunnel.
Right, let's go.
Ben checked his spell shooter while they still had enough ambient light from the chamber behind them.
I've only got one light spell left, he
he reported. How about the two of you? They both inventoried their own spells.
One here too,
Charlie replied after a second, and Natalie nodded.
We may need one for this next little bit, but after that, Grobek said we'd be close enough to the surface to start getting some light through the cracks.
Cool. We should hold off on firing it for as long as we can. Ben knew it was a good idea to keep the remaining spells in reserve, just in case.
Okay, lead on.
Natalie took the lead. Her elven eyesight was better adapted to the dark, allowing her to see in the gloom and shadows better than he or Charlie could, and as long as they could still make out her figure ahead of them, they could follow the path she took. After a few minutes, it did become too dark to even see her outline, and Charlie called out,
"Hang on a sec."
Ben could hear his best friend fumbling in the dark, and a second later, the distinctive crackle of a spell shooter being fired. Then a small blob appeared directly overhead. It slowly took on form and definition, slimming and reshaping, developing arms, legs, a head and small fluttering wings. After a few seconds, it was clearly a fairy, enveloped in a warm yellow glow like a tiny being made of sunlight. Ben glanced over at Charlie, and in the fresh light he could see his friend blushing.
"I thought it was cute," Charlie admitted.
"It is," he agreed, "and it works just as well as the orbs I've been using, so why not go with something with a little more..."
He searched for the right word.
"Flair?"
Natalie suggested, smiling. All three of them were grinning as they set off again, the tiny fairy flitting just ahead of them to light the way. They followed a few twists and turns, Natalie and Charlie directing them through each crossing, and after a few minutes, Ben noticed that the tunnel seemed to be sloping upwards slightly. He took that to be a good sign. When the fairy finally dimmed and then vanished 20 minutes later, he was pleased to note that he could still make out his friends, albeit dimly. They had reached an area that was no darker than twilight, and without the fairy's illumination, Ben could tell which direction the diffuse light was coming from. Sure enough, they continued in that direction, and after a few more minutes, they came to a wide intersection, like a crossroads but underground. From the ceiling overhead, through a myriad of tiny cracks, unmistakable rays of daylight were peeking through. They'd made it to the meeting point, but it was empty.
"You're sure this is the way Krobeg indicated?"
he asked, as they approached the intersection, slowing now that they didn't have to worry about covering distance before their light spells ran out.
"Absolutely," Charlie confirmed. "We followed his instructions, though admittedly, most of those consisted of, keep heading up and towards the lights, you can't miss it."
He shook his head.
"There weren't any other passes that led this way."
"Maybe they went ahead," Natalie suggested. "I know I'm looking forward to clean air and open skies again."
She repressed a small shudder, and Ben realized just how hard this trek must have been for her. Natalie was very much a creature of nature, particularly life and sun. She was most at home in a forest or on a green plain, someplace warm and alive. Being trapped underground with nothing but cold rock everywhere must have been a nightmare, but she hadn't complained once.
"Maybe," Ben said,
though he didn't think that was likely. Dagmar would have wanted to wait until they were all together, and they would have understood it was safer to stay out of view, especially because no one knew exactly what awaited them on the other side of this junction. Ben decided to check, just in case. He crossed to the far side and looked around. The path was wider here and sloped upwards, but it was empty.
"Maybe we turn off into one of these two side passages," Charlie suggested.
He stepped into the intersection, turned to the right, and quickly vanished from view. A moment later, he reappeared, shaking his head.
"They aren't this way," he confirmed.
Natalie had checked the opposite way and returned right after he did.
"Not here either," she said.
"Hello?" Ben called out, keeping his voice low. Nothing moved and no one responded.
"They're not here," he stated, "which means something must have happened to them."
His stomach twisted. He had suggested they split up. What if he had doomed his friends, and the seen and unseen kingdoms in the process?
"Okay,"
Natalie declared, her tone matter of fact. "Then they must have been stopped somewhere between here and that chamber. So we retrace our steps until we find them." Ben sighed. He knew she was trying to keep things upbeat and he appreciated that, but it didn't stop him from feeling guilty. Still, what else could they do? He fell in behind his friends as they turned,